9:35. Before I start class, why don't we begin with a word of prayer, shall we? Let us pray. Almighty God, Heavenly Father, we thank and praise you for being able to come together this day. We just ask, Lord, that you would be with us this day, that you would open our hearts and minds so that as we study your holy word, that our hearts would be open and we'd be strengthened in faith and love towards you. In Jesus' holy and precious name we pray. Tell people asking about Virgie. Yeah. Virgie kind of had some setbacks, but then she seemed to get better. She was moved to Dubuque, a care facility there by Trudy. I've been told Trudy works there, although that was secondhand, so I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what I was told. But anyway, then this last week she had some difficulty breathing, and so they were going to, I think they took her to Dubuque, the hospital there originally, but then I think just yesterday they decided to move her back to Iowa City. I think they said that she had some fluid filled up and they're going to try to take it out there. So that is where she is, as far as I know. So anyway, that's as much as I know. So there you go. All right, so today is the very, 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 very last study in this series. And we're going to talk a little bit, at least, about the modern world, the modern Israel world. I'll be honest, I don't have a ton of pictures today. Part of that's because I spent most of my time taking pictures of historic places and not the modern world. So if we run out of pictures early, that's okay. I might just have to give you free time. I got a lot going on with the Harvest Fest anyway. But I put every picture I had of the modern Israel world in here. So we'll kind of get going here.
Did you bring the box?
I did. I figured I'd wait a little bit, and then I'd kind of pass it around. Okay. I have three coins, and I have three rocks.
Good.
So I'll explain those after we go here. We're everywhere. We stayed mostly in a place called kibbutz. A kibbutz is a communal living house. A lot of times they were basically around some kind of industry or something like that. A lot of people actually lived in a kibbutz, but they also usually had extra rooms. It gave them extra money because tourists would come through and pay for rooms and so on and so forth. And you got to eat in all the cafeterias. A lot of times the kibbutz was very eclectic. You're going to notice even in this picture there's stuff all over the trees. And they just have this random checkerboard that's just out in the middle of the yard, basically. Sidewalk. So this is kind of one of the places we stayed. They got into a heated checker match. I think she won, if you're wondering. I'm pretty sure she was the winner. But anyway, these guys had stuff everywhere. They were taking like stereos that were broken, and they would just like paint them completely blue and just set them out. I don't really understand, but that was their style, I guess. That was this particular kibbutz. Not all kibbutz were the same. The one kibbutz we were at by the Sea of Galilee was a very nice place. But they were set up primarily for tourists. This place wasn't. This place has an industry. This was not the first kibbutz we stayed at. The first kibbutz we stayed at, just north of Jerusalem, I don't know what their industry was either, but it was a factory of some kind. And so we have a lot of the factory workers that would come through. This is actually at the airport. This is at the Istanbul airport. This is right after we went through our second security check, I think. So in the Istanbul airport, when you get in, you have to go through another security protocol just to make it to your terminal. So if you're in terminal, let's say A8 or something like that, you actually have to go through a security check just to get to that terminal. So like in America, once you get through the main security gate, you're fine. You're in that kind of area or whatever. With Istanbul, if you went in and out of the terminal, you had to go through a security check every single time. And their security check included opening up your luggage, your carry-on, whatever it was. It was going to be open. And they were going to sift through it. There was absolutely nothing that was left untouched. You had to take off your shoes. You had to do that whole bit. They did the whole thing. So this is Matt. He was one of the guys I hung out with. But anyway, this is right after we had done the security check. This is the Jerusalem marketplace. I actually have a few pictures of the Jerusalem marketplace. It was fascinating and crowded, incredibly crowded, like people bumping into people everywhere you went. And so this is kind of a big shot of all the various places, but they had everything there. I mean, this here is a little diner right here, but this guy over here is selling, I don't know what he's selling, but he's selling something or other. This right here is shawarma, which I have another picture of that here. Which is like shawarma's kind of like it's not hot dog, but it's basically chicken. It's a sliced roasted chicken. Another shot of the marketplace. This marketplace went on for like two or three city blocks, all the way in and around all the buildings and all that kind of stuff. So there's just stuff everywhere. There's restaurants everywhere, but there's also people selling fresh fruit. Vegetables, trinkets, anything. This is the new Jerusalem marketplace, by the way. Don't get confused. Sometimes people will talk about going to the old Jerusalem marketplace. That is inside the city walls of Jerusalem. That is a really, 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 really old-fashioned kind of marketplace. That's where people haggle all the time. They didn't haggle near as much here. This was more modern. Like, you know, whatever they said the price was, that's what it was. They didn't make it go really high. Like I told you guys all the story about the $20 ice cream, right? Guy trying to sell ice cream for $20. My friend walked by. I'll give you a dollar. Okay. I'll sell it for a dollar. That's the old Jerusalem city. That was very much an old-fashioned kind of marketplace. Their actual, stores were about the size of this table. And they would just sit out there with the table kind of stacked all over the place. So, but this is the new city, or the new portion. Anyway, again, marketplace. By the way, just for comic relief here, that's Matt, that same guy you saw in that picture a couple of times ago. Look at how red he is. Oh, man. I wore sunscreen. Matt did not. He got really sunburned. Anyway, did you have a question?
Well, you talked about the airport in Istanbul. Then did you fly into Jerusalem?
No, the only real major airport they have is in Tel Aviv. So every flight into Israel goes in Tel Aviv.
How do you get from Istanbul to Israel?
No. Flight. We flew from Istanbul to Tel Aviv, and then we got on the bus.
And I heard an Israeli security agreed with something.
Well, I mean, compared to, like, the American security, in America, you go through the things, and kind of that's that. With Israeli security, they ask you a series of questions, and then you go check your bags and get your boarding pass. And then, once you go through security, you're going to get, frisked, and they're going to open your bag up. There's just, again, with America, they run it through the scanner and then they decide whether or not it's worth the check. In Israel, it's going to be open. They're going to run through the scanner, too, to make sure they're not going to miss anything, but then they're going to open it. And then once you get to Istanbul, you'll walk out of your terminal, but then when you head to your other terminal, you'll get checked again. All things considered, if you were leaving Israel, you're going to get checked over at least three times before you're able to board a plane in this airport. And they're going to check your check-in bag, they're going to check your carry-on bag, they're going to open up your carry-on bag, they're going to frisk you, they're going to do all the whatever. So yes, lots and lots and lots of security. So you felt a lot more secure. That was Israeli security. All right. Wine. Cabernet Sauvignon. I think the next picture is actually the same wine bottle on the other side. Par is the word there. By the way, Hebrew is read this direction. Not English would read the other direction. Hebrew's read that. Par means mountain. So this particular wine or company was called Mountain.
Yeah, you read Bear and the other.
We did. Nothing of really. Let's just say that Israel's probably not going to be known for the beer. I had something called their Gold Star, which was, I think, their equivalent to like a Bud Light or a Budweiser, and that's their most popular beer, and I'd say it's probably not as good as Budweiser, but it was okay. We went to a craft brew too, which craft brews, by the way, are starting to pop up in Israel. So there are craft brews that you can go to and stuff like that. But even then, I'll be honest, I don't think there was one beer that I had and I was like, oh, this is great. This is just the best beer I've ever had. No. It was okay. Their wine, though, was very, very good. One of the things that was significant about this one, and actually why I took a picture of it, that 2016, that was one of their years off. And so what they're allowed to do, you know, like every 7 years they let the land rest. They won't plant anything. Whatever happens to pop up, pops up. And whatever happens, happens. They'll harvest it, but they don't work it. They don't fertilize it. They don't, you know, till it, water it, anything. This came from 2016, one of those years, one of those harvest years. And so basically when it hit 2017, they went out and harvested whatever grapes they could get. And they made wine out of it. And so that was one of the unique things about this, was it was a 2016 Cabernet, which means it was made from the Jubilee year. So the land. So that means whatever grapes they got. So obviously they got enough to go make wine and sell it. But. Yeah, there's the back of the bottle. Oh, Mount Tabor. Yeah. Mount Tabor. Mount Tabor is at the top end of the Jezreel Valley. But yes, I just love this. I just love having the Hebrew everywhere. But everything's in Hebrew, except for the title, Cabernet Sauvignon. Oh, I went backwards. Doritos, anyone? Who doesn't like Doritos? In Hebrew. Pretty much everything is the same. Except for the writing. It was in Hebrew, yeah. These little things up here, I don't know what that is. They're like peanut butter puffs. That's about the best way to say it. These little things are like peanut butter puffs. I was told, you gotta try them. We tried it by letting the peanut butter puffs. But then they're like, yes, but everybody around here loves them. So I guess the Israelis love peanut butter puffs. So if you find yourself eating a bag of peanut butter puffs, just think, that was what the Israelis did. I can do the Hebrew, I cannot do whatever that is. So I'm guessing that's Arabic or something, but it's not Hebrew. But anyway, so I have no idea what that says. But it's basically peanut butter puffs. But they were extremely popular.
How do you say Doritos in Hebrew?
Dorito. Dalit, O-R, like a Roche. That's an E sound, that's a T sound, and then that's basically another Yod, and then a kind of an O. Actually, that's a Sigma, so Doritos. Now, they might overwhelmingly pronounce some of the vowels a little bit more than we would, so they might call it Doritos, but, you know, accents are different, but same difference. All right, this is, I put a few group shots in with this so you can kind of see the whole group. This is actually us on the Sea of Galilee coming down. There's actually a church on the other side of us that we kind of went to see. It's a Catholic church. One of the things I thought was really kind of cool about this, and I know I've seen this in America before, but I just thought it was really neat. That's not sand. It's seashells. Everything is a seashell. Like, I picked it up, and it's like every single one of them is a seashell. And, you know, I've seen that before. I've seen that in the States before. I can't remember where, but I've seen it before.
St. Augustine, Florida. St. Augustine, Florida.
Okay. I was going to say, I've never been to St. Augustine, Florida.
But it's like that.
Yeah.
And they even make, like, walls. It's so hard back that they can just cut it with a saw and make it.
Yeah. Well, when we were walking on this, I thought it was sand. And I picked it up to look at it. And yeah, sure enough, it was all seashell. I was blown away how many seashells it was.
Now, is that land on the other side of
Galilee?
It looks like it could be.
Yeah. You can see all the way across the Sea of Galilee. Like I said, I think when we look at a map, we think of it as, like, huge. And it is a good size, don't get me wrong, but it's just not, like Great Lakes. huge. Great Lakes are bigger than the Sea of Galilee. It's big, but it's not that big. They used to, I guess from what I understand, back in like the 90s, you could go there and they'd have like speedboats and stuff. But they've kind of done away with most of that. And now most of the time all you see is the boats, which are the replica of the first century boats from the Sea of Galilee that aren't really the replicas because they're like four times as big and fit like 40 people instead of four. So, anyway. Alright, this is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. I put these in slides with modern Israel because, well, that's modern. I mean, modern to some degree. I mean, I think it was built in, what, like 600, 700 AD? So, not real, real modern, but as we study the life and times of Christ, that's modern by comparison. So this is the Temple Mount. That is an Islamic temple. The Golden Dome, I think we calculated it, has approximately $176 million worth of gold. So that's roughly the translated price or something like that. So it is gold, like real gold. So this is some of the irony of all of this, and this is why it's hard to pin some of this stuff down. So if you were to talk to somebody who is Muslim or Islamic, this is the Dome of the Rock. Supposedly that's one of the places that was put forth as the place that whenever Muhammad was taken up into heaven or whatever, the last place his foot touched. The problem is that you see this little thing right here? That's called the Temple of Ascension, which is the temple put over the place, the last place that Muhammad touched before he ascended into heaven, supposedly. You can see some of the confusion that might erupt from this. And then they have another temple over here that has very similar meanings. Very confused bunch. Basically, what it comes down to is when Islamic forces took over, they knew that this was a holy site for Christians and Jews. And so they basically just destroyed, well, the temple was already destroyed. They just built their temple on top of where we should have had our temple. And they called it a day. And then when they kind of took over, they really didn't know why it was supposed to be significant, so they kind of made stuff up. I'm sorry, truth. So they get confused with some of their traditions, and so they have random stuff all over the place. But anyway, so that's a kind of a good image of the dome. We're on the Temple Mount. Again, the Temple Mount was a very interesting place because they had both Israeli guards and Palestinian guards. But again, one of the ironies was, and a lot of people get confused about this, the Israelis allow the Muslims to control the Temple Mount because they don't want to start a war. In all honesty, that's the only reason that they actually gave it made any sense. Because Israelis control this. You see, even the guards, they had guns but no bullets. The Israeli guards had all the bullets. So if something were to go down on the Temple Mount, the Israelis have to decide whether or not the Islamic guards are going to get bullets. Like, they have clips for their guns on them, but they are not allowed to carry their own bullets. So even the guards that the Islamic guards that they have is just for show. Israel controls this temple now. They allow the Muslims to still maintain their temple and everything because they know that if they were to go in and take that by force, it would basically start another massive war. And they don't want to see that happen. At least at this point. So they allow it to kind of take place in this manner.
Can only Muslims go in there, under the dome?
Yes. At least I did not go in. They had an open door, and I tried to take some pictures through the open door, but it was so dark that if you were to see my pictures, it would look like I just took a picture of a door with darkness. You know, you really can't see anything, so all you see is like black And there wasn't a whole lot to see. Basically, the center of the room had a part where the stone kind of comes up.
You know, since you're not there, and you're talking about the soldiers for protection.
Yes.
Are you aware of the incident in Pittsburgh, the synagogue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think it will get to the point that there will be guards at these places?
There is guards at that place in Pittsburgh on certain days. This particular day, there was no guards.
Is that right?
Yeah. And you knew that.
Yeah. I know the incident. I don't know the ins and outs, so I can't speak to that in an educated manner. So, I can tell you that it aren't there. Well, sure. Sure. Yeah. It was very interesting being up on the Temple Mount, and, you know, like, so there was some interesting stuff. I will be honest, I didn't include these pictures. I just, maybe I should have. But, like, they have stuff, like, where you're the stairs kind of go awkwardly. And it's one of those things, when they built the temple, you see, and they would actually, Islamic folk, the Palestinians in this category, would argue in a very unique way. They don't like to admit that the temple ever stood there. Even though we have tons of proof that it did. So one of the things that a lot of scholars, when they were first allowed to kind of come up to the Temple Mount, one of the things that they found is that, like, if you spot something of significance, you can't say it. You can't even write about it. Because if you write about it, or if you say it, the Palestinians will go and try to cover it up. So, like, for instance, one of the things that our professor pointed out to us was that the stairs were crooked. And they are. Because the original temple, when it was built, was not built with this in mind. It was built in a different kind of line. And so the stairs kind of go straight in it like that. And it's kind of this awkward, like, crookedness. It was not originally like that by design. What they did, though, is that was the original temple stairs kind of going up. And then because this dome of rock was built according to the right, you know, in the right exact precise place, they tried to shift the stairs. Well, you can't say that, because if you say that, they'll come in and destroy the stairs and put the new ones up. The Palestinians are, in this regard, are a little bit crafty and not good natured. There's another part here, and again, I don't have a picture of it. I think I mentioned this in one of our classes, though. There's actually a part of this Temple Mount that's sagging, because they went in secret by night, and they started just digging and digging and digging. And they started taking truckloads of dirt out by night so that the Israelis couldn't see them. And then when they were finally caught, they were going to try to build another, like, temple down below. Well, the problem is that, first of all, they had no structural engineer or anything on board, so they basically just dug the dirt out without any support and almost collapsed the whole one side of the Temple Mount. And the second thing was they just took the dirt and dumped it and didn't tell the Israelis where they dumped it. So you got to realize, it's archaeological gold. I mean, there's so much history there. The Israelis would have sifted the dirt to see if they could, now they're not going to get a chance. Because they just took it out by night because they knew what they were doing wasn't allowed, and they just did it anyway. And so you got kind of a both sides negative. So if you look at pictures of the Temple Mount, you'll notice, like, one end just sagged. Just a little, not a lot. Because they got structural engineers in there to kind of fix it, but it still sags a little. And that's why. Yeah. I don't know what the repercussions were. We were just told that's why it sagged a little. Kind of got the story, but not the end result. So yeah, so here's this other kind of side temple on the side. There's the entrance to the Temple of the Dome. Dome of the Rock, sorry, getting all messed up. There's some camels, randomly. I thought it was fun. We saw a lot of camels on our trip. I also have to add in a picture of a group shot of us holding the Israel flag, because everywhere we went, our group leader made us carry and hold the Israeli flag. So you got to have a group shot. That's actually us right behind us. Ironically, right behind us is the Temple of the Dome in Jerusalem. So. This is in the streets of Jerusalem proper, so behind the walls. Just a little girl helping her sister out. Thought it was cute. I took a picture of this. I'm pretty sure it's not authentic. I don't know. Capernaum, the town of Jesus. I don't think it was around the time of Jesus. But anyway, some of the signs. This was really pretty in the town of Capernaum. In the city of Capernaum, they had signs like these. These are all like mosaics. They just had these all over the place. I thought they were very pretty. Very well done in that regard. There's our group leader holding our sign. That sign was on the front of our bus. Everywhere we went. So we were at Concordia Seminary. Kobe is our tour guide here. Does have the blue. All right, so here's kind of the other, some of my pictures got shuffled, but okay. But again, we're on the other side of this market. You can kind of see the fresh. Actually, our pictures didn't go get too shuffled. I went there a couple times. Took pictures at different times. Part of this thing was inside, part of it was outside. They sold these little things. By the way, these little things are delicious. Oh, no, these over here. Can't see them. Well, they're like crescent rolls, and that looks like crescent rolls. They're crescent rolls with like a fig paste on them. It is phenomenal. They had these things everywhere, and boy, were they delicious. We had them for breakfast like every other day. They were just fantastic. So get yourself some fig paste, get a crescent roll, roll it on up in there, and that was delicious. I don't know if that's more, I'm sure they did more, but who cares? They were fantastic. But they had a lot of these kind of things. Yeah.
Those are prices on there.
Yeah. Everything's in a new shekel. New shekel. Yeah, everything is priced by a new shekel. New shekel rates are basically for every 3 shekels, new shekel you get a dollar. So you can kind of figure out prices based on that. So if it says, you know, 6, it's basically $2. But don't let them do the exchange rate. Just get new shekels. Easiest way to get new shekels, go to an ATM machine. Your ATM doesn't give you American money, it gives you shekels, so it's great. When we were at the airport, there's an ATM machine, and our guide kind of said, hey, you know, if you want shekels, get them here, you know, pretty good, all that kind of stuff. Well, he didn't tell us what the exchange rate was. So I had no idea. So I got 100 shekels. I thought, that's good. $33. Here I thought I was going to be good for like most of the, at least several days. Instead I got out $33. So anyway, so yeah, that lasted like 2 days. And that was just a blunt.
Do you use a credit card over there?
You can, but not everywhere. Your best bet again. Yeah, probably not here, but some of the places here would. And, it was just, you know, when you're over there, it just made a whole lot more sense. It was a lot easier just to use the new shekel currency. Just pull it out. They had ATMs everywhere as well. I was a little worried about that once I found out about the exchange rate because, you know, everybody was kind of pushing the airport. And then we got out of the airport, and I was like, oh, no. When I found out the actual exchange rate, I was like, I didn't meet or not. But then I found out they had ATMs everywhere. So, yeah, not a big deal. But we got through. But, yeah.
It was
You have various types of olive oils. They're more or less, I mean, you know, the olives have been their business forever and a day. So, olives and olive oil.
That's true. All different olives in the trays there?
No, I don't think so. But I think, you know, again, this is like a street vendor. So I think he's just putting his product wherever he can. So those are, you know, some of those are nuts and such. But, that might help. They had a lot of what? They had some, yeah. I don't know about a lot. I mean, depending on where you went, of course, but I know they had some for sure. Kind of looking out at the marketplace. This is at the edge of the marketplace, looking out, so you can kind of see the end of it. You had to put that in there so you can see how a lot of people, maybe even most people, transport it.
Did you
use it? No, we have a bus, so we use the bus for everything. All right, falafel guy, or shawarma guy, here we go. Shawarma, it's delicious. No, in this case, it's chicken. I'm not going to say that they didn't have lamb ones. I'm sure they did. They have lamb, have everything. But in this case, this was just chicken shawarma. And basically, what he does is he'll take a knife and he'll just slide it down and slice off a little piece. Some gyros a lot of times are made like this. Same kind of principle. But then everything is served in pita bread. So it's always fresh and delicious pita bread. I have a video somewhere, and I wasn't able to put it in my presentation. Now, he was making falafel, but he was flinging up the falafel balls and catching them in the pita bread. It was kind of fun. It was kind of like a show and a dinner at the same time.
A lot of times you go out to a place that serves up those things that with lamb and beef. It's not completely lamb, it's about
8%,
20%.
Sure, sure.
Very good.
Yeah.
This is probably a dumb question. How did they get chicken on the skewer to slice up like that? I mean, chicken.
Have you ever seen them grow like that?
Well, it's like chicken pancakes, just lined up and roasted on a stick like that. By the way, one of the neat things about this is what they put on top. They would top it with French fries. So they cut this off. You get your salad, your hummus on the bottom, your salad, some sauce, your meat, and then on top of it they put French fries. And they also had a spicy sauce. When to try that. It was actually spicy. So, very happy. Of course, a whole group of us went in for shawarma, so he was very happy. Made a lot of sales.
No cucumber sauce or anything like that.
Some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on where. We went to a lot of different places. We basically had either falafel or shawarma for lunch every single day. In some places it had both. And they bring it to the table, so we had both. Yeah?
So when you were over there, and so like, you didn't, I mean, like, I know China and places like that have had to battle the Burger King did Israel have, I don't know, did you walk back to McDonald's or whatever?
They did have McDonald's. They did.
Really?
I can't remember. I don't know if I put it in here or not. I hope I did. I think I did. But there's a picture of a McDonald's on it. So, yeah, they had McDonald's, but no bacon cheeseburger. That's right, that's right. But they, you know, it's like most of their food, most of the food that we had, which was fairly authentic, because again, we say like where the factory workers were eating most of the time. You know, a lot of times it was very similar to what I'm accustomed to, just slightly tweaked, just a little bit different. Like you know, I don't really eat boiled eggs. I know Easter, but I don't eat hard-boiled eggs. But they had one recipe that was basically hard-boiled eggs and spaghetti marinara sauce. Yeah, that was a breakfast food. I didn't know what it was at first. And so, no, I don't like hard-boiled eggs. There were several times, though, there was like grilled vegetables out. And so I'd pick them up, and then they were cold. They didn't serve the grilled vegetables hot. They would chill them, like, overnight in the fridge. I thought that was awesome. But, I mean, even at dinner, though, that was the case. Like, you know, so obviously that's just the way they're used to eating them. But, yeah, it's just like a grilled vegetables and we can get them cold. So this is the first of a few pictures I have. Again, you know, just their laws in terms of guns are a little different than America's. And once you understood that, it wasn't all that bad. But still, the first couple times when you walk around and see a random person with a rifle strapped to their back, it was a little unnerving. But again, at the same time, once you begin to understand their laws, it's just different. You know, it's not better or worse, it's different. It's very hard to get a gun if you're just a private citizen over there. But if you do get one, it has to be behind two locked doors. So your house equals one locked door, you need a safe, that would equal a second locked door. If you do not have that, you become the safe. Therefore, if you own a gun and you have a locked door but you do not have a safe inside, you carry that gun with you everywhere you go. You are the same.
So you have to
conceal
there.
There's nothing concealed
there. They're not concealing anything. They're just walking around with it. Now, a lot of times with this kind of scenario, what you get is because they have mandatory military service, a lot of times that's what's happening here. It's like this guy is probably in the military, but he's on leave. So he's not in active duty, but he still has a gun. But he doesn't know his gun is safe. So he, even though he's not on active duty right now, he has to carry his gun with him everywhere he goes.
Is it loaded?
No, it's not loaded. There's no clip in it. No. No. He might. I don't know about that. And you saw this all over the place. I have some more pictures, too, that kind of feature this, but. Yeah, probably.
So are there many citizens that have been in cities?
There are some. There are some. Not many, though. Not many at all. Oh, yeah. This is just a house that's really in bad shape. We were going down to see something. And I don't think... Yeah, this one doesn't have it. Right down the road from this house, and we just thought this was funny as all could be, there was a car stuck in the roof. I don't know how a car got stuck in the roof, but there was a car, and when we were driving through, my buddy pointed it out, and then on our way back, I tried to snap a picture of it. I think this was one of the attempts. But the problem is I got the picture. I mean, the bus was moving so fast. I got the picture afterwards. So... All right, here we go. Here's some more. Again, this guy's probably a soldier on leave. So there he is, weapon. You ask what his shirt says?
Yeah.
Ben Kurosh, it's a son of Kurosh, whoever Kurosh is. So it's probably beyond his five band. You know, like you may have heard of the band like Sons of Korah or something like that. Sons of Kurosh. So. They did offer a pretty, well, not pretty, but camel ride. For some fun. We were actually looking at Jerusalem at this point. And where we were here, and they told us, oh, what was it? They told us, try not to make eye contact with the people, but also make sure you don't keep your eyes off of them too long. Apparently they were known for pickpocketing tourists, because this was like a known view area for Jerusalem. In fact, a lot of those distant pictures you see, this is where they came from. And there was just tour buses everywhere, but these guys were, you know, they were known for like pickpocketing and stuff like that. And so you didn't want to make eye contact with them, because then they'd try to sell you stuff. But you also didn't want to take your eyes off of them, because then they'd probably try to steal your money. So.
Where did you carry your money?
No, I actually had one of those packs, basically. Hidden packs.
Yeah.
And that's usually where I carry my money. I'd always carry a little bit in one of my pockets, but anything of worth would be in that pack. Okay, this is actually Bethlehem. I noticed I had a few more pictures that I didn't get last time, but this is modern Bethlehem. Streets, the buildings. I don't know about everywhere, but definitely in most of the inner cities, yeah, they were pretty narrow. But they were, I mean, you know, you put it in perspective, though, some of these towns and cities date back. You know, Tiberias, while we were in Tiberias, they actually celebrated the Israeli New Year, 70 years. And we were in Tiberias, and they were celebrating their 2,000-year anniversary. So they had been established as a town consecutively for 2,000 years. You think Bethlehem was known at the time of Jesus, and it didn't go away. I mean, it was really small and nothing, but still.
So you have a lot of walkers, you know, did they have bicycles or motorbikes?
Yeah, some of them did, but I wouldn't say a ton of them did.
Okay.
They had those like little scooter things. Mm-hmm. Olive wood in Bethlehem. Again, these are all olive wood. This is all olive wood. They're known, their carvers of olive wood are known in Bethlehem.
Is that a real olive
wood? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Apparently I don't have my sign of McDonald's, because that's the last slide. So I don't know where my sign of McDonald's is. But anyway, there it is. A few pieces of pottery. I was very specific in what I grabbed. Like I said, it was kind of a dumb place, so you could grab anything. So I have no idea about the years of any of this or any of the specifics. But I grabbed a couple pieces, and I grabbed them for specific reasons. This is the lip of some kind of a piece of pottery. And the reason I grabbed this is because a lot of times it's those lips that they use to date them. That is, they you know, people made lips on the boss's face on what year or century they were in. And so a lot of times you can tell that. The other thing is handles. The way they would make handles was also something of significance. They didn't make handles in the same way as those modes of updating the handles came about. That's how you date things. And then the only other piece I got was not really all that significant, but I basically got it because it was small and it had the markings on it. That is to say, they thought this was something at some point. And so they took it, they cataloged it, they investigated, found out that it was nothing, threw it in the junk pile. So, but you can see how they catalog things. So I figured it'd be nice to see that. So, and the next couple things I have are coins. I am going to take them out of the bag. Please be careful. They are tiny. They are not big coins. Two of them, you can kind of make something out, but not really. They're pretty corroded. I've tried to clean them up a little bit, and I'm working at it. I'll get it eventually. But the last one is the only one that has really, really clear identification marks on it. And so you can really kind of see what it is. I did look it up. And it's one of those coins where it would have been around roughly at the time when Jesus would have been in Egypt. So that's putting it in time frame. So somewhere around, 4 BC to maybe 4 AD roughly, or somewhere around there, about the time when Jesus would have been in Egypt. And this was more or less an Israeli coin, a Jewish coin. And one of the things that you can tell of Jewish coins is it's got a picture of wheat on it, which means it was probably a temple coin. That is to say, they couldn't carry in images of Caesar because that would be considered idolatry. And so they would change the money, right? We've all heard that before. Change the money into money that was less idolatrous, hence the wheat. So that's kind of what this coin is. I doubt Jesus himself ever ran into these coins because they were pretty much out of use by the time he was old enough that he was using coins. But maybe Mary and Joseph. Who knows? So anyway, so I got three coins. So let's see. Should I start them? So again, they're very, very tiny. And the coins are very interesting in that you wouldn't think you could just go on the street and buy coins, but basically they have found so many of them that the Israeli Antique Society and place that preserves these things, they've started to give them away. They've given them away to jewelers and other people trying to see if they can make jewelry out of them. And I did stop at a jewelry shop to see if I could get coins there. They're pretty selective. They only take the best pieces, they clean them up, and then they charge you like $200 for them. I took option B, which was to find a place that had coins, but they were not so clean, and you couldn't really tell what they were, for the most part. Even that one that had markings, if you would have seen it before I tried to clean it up, you couldn't tell what it was. I mean, it just looked like a blob of green. So that's pretty much what it looked like. Don't know. It's definitely corroded, but. Oh, I think that was a pretty penny, that particular one. Now, some of these that were just on the wall, they would have been a lot less, maybe looking at like maybe $10 or something like that. And again, I don't know how much you could haggle them down or something like that. Yeah, the other thing you got to think about is at some point you got to think, what can I fit in my luggage? Will not be destroyed on the way back home and all those kind of things. I don't think none of our group bought that. So we did take a picture. It was very pretty. They had some very, very pretty things. So. All right. Well, that's all the pictures I have. So, is there any other questions?
Like in the market, was it loud?
In the Jerusalem market, yeah. In the old city market.
Did you hear, arguing or...
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. They were, to be honest with you, as a haggler even, they were very abrasive at times. You know, and they didn't always let you go. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you like try to, I even talk about like these shirts. I was looking at shirts, thinking of getting them for my children, and of course they didn't have anything size-wise out. They were all in like pre-packaged things. And so the guy, like, well, how much did you pay for the shirt? I'm like, oh, I'm just looking. I tried to leave. That was a bad mistake. Like, wrap his arm around me, like, you come back here. We're going to, how much?
They don't want you to go to somebody else's area.
Yeah. And before you know it, like, 15 minutes later, I bought 3 shirts or something like that. I paid like, $10 for 3 shirts, which I thought was an okay deal. And he asked me, you know, what the size of my kids were. And I was looking at the size charts, and I was like, I don't, you know, I told him the ages and roughly, and he's, oh, yeah, I think that is all wrong. I get home, and we take them out of the packaging, and I'm like, no way my kids can fit in that. It's like an infant t-shirt, you know, they're all real tiny. So, woo-hoo. Thank you. So yeah, so I bought 3 shirts for like $10, and they're all really tiny. oh yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. I don't know. But anyway, but yeah. So anyway, I guess the point of the story is, yeah, they're pretty aggressive. And like even the whole time, like, oh my gosh, every time. Because he wanted to sell me these shirts for 60 shekels. So, you know, that's about what, $20? Yeah. So he wanted to sell these shirts for like 20, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's too much. Actually, it was just 1 shirt for 60. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, I'll throw in an extra shirt. I'm like, I still don't really want that. I'll throw in another shirt. Like, I really don't want that, you know. And then he kept saying, oh, you're so hard. You're difficult to deal with. Oh, you know. And I was like, well, that's okay. I'll just go somewhere. No. So finally, I was like, I better buy this shirt.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In Israel itself, did they have any of these Muslim towers where they go to prayer?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In Israel?
Yeah, I mean most of them, I'd say most of them were actually more in Palestine. I mean, we heard of that before. Like you could hear them. And there was still a couple mosques even in Israel. In fact, you saw the pictures, but I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but there's a couple pictures where I'm looking at up in Beth Horon. Which is where Joshua would have gone whenever he went up the hill and then went to the Ilon Valley and all that kind of stuff. But on that top end, we were standing on top of a mosque to take that picture. And we were allowed to. They allowed us to go up there. So you go up to the top of the mosque. You can't go in the mosque. You can kind of go in the front door and then up the stairs. But then the actual mosque has blocked the work. And then irony of ironies, there's a Jewish synagogue below it. Don't know how that works, but whatever. But yeah, we were on the roof of the mosque taking all those pictures. So yeah. All right, well, that will be the end of class. Next week, we'll begin a lesson on Paul. So, see you then. Woohoo! Thank you.
No.